Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It's about 1:30 my time, a.m., when it's quiet and I get things done. I'm smoking a little stick here my buddy Dave gave me. It's an HVC Adesion Special 2015. It's New World, I think. Otherwise, it'd probably say Habana all over. Oh, no, it's Havana City. Thank you, Dave. Today, I'm going to make an episode that I was nearly going to make last night, but I had another epiphany last night, which you'll see to be the next one I'm editing, called Setting Standards, if something doesn't go wrong. Herc916, love you, man. This dude is a guy who was, I think I can say safely, was a very smart kid who just may have gone through what my buddy went through, which is sort of like when you're really smart, you kind of get bored of life sometimes and you need a challenge. And he said he didn't have his dad, you know, close by when he was young. And so, you know, he's just kind of got in with the wrong folks. Eventually, huge dude. They call him Herc because he's Hercules, right? And he does a show called Fresh Out that I've talked about a couple times. And he does his own channel. I think he's like about three channels at least, but Fresh Out and his own Herc916. They're just great. Big Herc916, maybe that's what it is. Don't want to say it wrong. He's all about positivity and inspiration and stuff, but he's trying to keep kids from going to prison because at one point in his life, he did an armed robbery of a bank and got caught. Yes, he thinks it was an idiotic thing to do. He got, I think, 10 years, but only did, you know, only 8 and some change, almost 9 years. And as he said, you can die every day in prison. So it doesn't matter how long your sentence is or how short your sentence is, you can die every day in prison. And so he goes around interviewing inmates and tries to keep people from getting into this glorified, you know, really it's gangster rap, right? You don't have a lot of rock and roll songs or country songs or new age songs going, you know, F the police and go out and commit a crime to prove you're a man or something like that. And then there's just people chattering with each other. So anyway, this isn't about him, but I could probably do one about him. He used to live in HB. That's what's cool. He's a skateboarder. He does crazy exotic cars. So I'm sure he'll be back through town one day. I've told him I want to put him on the show, and he was kind enough to kind of chat with me for a split second on a particular day. But I think he moved to Arizona. I know he did move to Arizona. I think he's still there. Anyway, he's up late one night and he does a little tiny, like 9-minute video about what we're going to talk about in here because it's a big deal, which is your gut instinct. I know that doesn't sound super sexy, but you know what we do. We take it way further than just a simple concept. Because I've been thinking about this gut instinct thing for a very long time, especially when I heard that the Asian communities, various Asian countries, they're very big on the gut. In their languages, they'll say, well, you know, you're proposing something that you may or may not do, and they'll just go, okay, what's your gut say? And they're not just like a casual American, yeah, what's your gut say? You know, we have pockets in America where we believe in the gut. I think as time passes, unfortunately, we're dialing away from truly knowledge and instinct of who we are, which is what this episode is going to be about. Because I think the gut instinct is super duper real. And I think it could have multiple influences. I doubt anyone's new to the show on this particular episode because it's not tremendously sexy. But maybe you've only watched a couple. I mean, Evolution will have come out 2 episodes before this. On this show, I'm really big on deducing everything that I have experienced, my foyers into science, that we have a soul. It is not a religious soul, which I hate saying because I don't want to diminish anyone's religion. At the same time, I don't want to sound like that if someone said something about the soul in religion, in any religion, I'm not trying to say that all those attributes of a soul are untrue at all. I just don't want you to run away because you're thinking, oh, here comes a Christian, here comes a Jew, here comes whatever, right? I think we are a symbiotic being, and I think it plays in heavily to the gut. Because we have different levels of what we would otherwise call intuition. Here's the way I personally distinguish the two. I think intuition is something that we gained at a much later time in human development. Because intuition seems very intellectual. It seems like intuition is sort of is the fine brush to a particular feeling of, should you do this? Should you do that? What do you feel about this person? What do you feel about this venture you just discussed? I also think intuition at times has convinced me that if there are any spirits that are still hovering around this plane of existence that we're in, post-life or even pre-life, pre-our life, pre-human, that they could be whispering in our ears, and that that is the only method by which they really have an artery to us, because if they've already lived and passed, chances are, obviously, they are very intellectual. They are at maximum potential of whatever a soul can achieve. And we will talk about souls in this episode because I feel like that has a little bit to do with sort of our potential, as well as our potential to receive, our potential to enact, and our potential to be influenced by others. And I'm trying to base this on what I would call like my internal logic, which is an ever-flowing book that just keeps getting written as you get older and older. Your logic gates change and they develop. But then there's the gut. The gut for me is a super obtuse, coarse brush, punch in the gut, one way or the other. Because a lot of times we don't remember gut feelings if they're positive. Smart people do. Smart people talk about that. Can't say I've been that smart in that particular realm for a very, very long time. I mean, probably in my 30s before I really started going, oh man, I just had a gut instinct about this and I just thought it was going to be great. I had been having those feelings, but didn't attribute it to the gut. But here's what's really strange about our being. We are a glandular being, right? You've seen the images of the chakra. So someone's sitting in this amazing chakra pose and there's the seven chakras. And there are always glands throughout our body. The most complex organs mechanically in our body are typically our glands. One of the most important ones for consciousness is the third eye. If the soul enters through the brainstem, having grown from the original spark that I just mentioned in the evolutionary episode, when the sperm and the egg come together and this tubular thing that is a Homo sapiens sapiens starts to form, your pineal gland is sort of like the internet connection to the internet, the soul connection to the database and the sort of the best social media out there. The rest is your body. The rest is your computer or your robot, your android, your replicant. Isn't it interesting that we have a guttural feeling? We call it the gut. Why? Because we feel it right in our gut. We don't feel it in our stomach. We don't feel it in our kidneys. We don't feel it in our special purposes. We feel it in our gut. Well, look at the gut medically. It's there to digest food. What does it have to do with consciousness? Now, interestingly enough, the brain is a bunch of tubes. Everything's a bunch of tubes, just like I said in the Evolution 2021 episode. And you could probably build a sculpture out of somebody's guts, like an animal guts, as long as you just keep, rotating them around to look like a brain. But I don't think that's what it is. I think that we have chakras that, and I'm sure that those of you who study chakras, you're laughing your head off at me because you know all the details, and please dump it in the comments. I'm not trying to bait you, trust me. But if you're an expert at this, here's your opportunity to listen to someone who's just coming from life experiences. So if I get anything right, according to your research, then I'm just one of those guys that, yeah, it was obvious at one point. By the way, I've said it many times, but Dave Dude is the channel that my buddy runs that reviews Cuban cigars at a level that no one on earth does. Don't worry about if it's not as fancy, perhaps, although it's getting fancier and fancier. This dude has better connections than anyone on planet Earth in terms of getting the right information about Cuban cigars. So anyway, digression off. I think what's going on is that, and let's slow down the chronology like I always do on the show. You are going for an intellectual thought. You are contemplating something. You're about to make a decision is what contemplation is, right? All right. Interestingly enough, this is when you would go for the deepest database lookup of everything that you would have accumulated since you've been here on Earth. Should I get married? Should I get engaged? Should I go out with this person? Should I take this job? Should I not drive the car in the bad weather? All those things. Should I let my kid go off with somebody else? You're going deeper, and the more severe and impactful you think the decision you're about to make is going to affect your life, I think without consciously realizing it, you can feel the database lookup going out. You prepare a query, and you shove it through your pineal gland to go out, just like the I.O. Tower in Tron 1982, right? It jams back out to the universe, and you're waiting for Alan 1 to look at it and go, yay, nay, binary, whoof, goes back down on you. Now, here's what's interesting. The less severe and impactful the contemplation that you're about to go through is, in my opinion, your gut fires at a proportionately smaller level of adjustment impact to your gut. The more cataclysmic that a decision is, or the repercussions of a decision, we feel a gong go off in our gut, right? We feel an atomic bomb go off on our gut. It's the most amazing thing. And what's interesting about that is that you could be making or preparing to make a decision about something you think is fairly incidental. And sometimes, I'm sure that by the time you're 40 years old, this has happened to you at least once, if not a dozen times, or if not 100 times. But you'll put out this, hey, well, you know, should I do this? And all of a sudden your gut goes, boom. And it's like, don't you dare do that. And then your whole perspective, your level of enlightenment starts to, you know, whoa, 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 what's going on here? And then something will happen, right? It's like those Twilight Zones where someone decided not to get on a plane, and if they had, they would have died. And so later, they realize there was great truth in the gut. But why take this idea of the gut feeling? Because Big Herc got it right. He was like, he said, you need to trust that stuff. I think the reason why we trust it is because it's usually categorically correct. The only time, I mean, it's still correct. But the only time you develop major regrets in life is typically when you go against your gut. And when you go against your gut, it's always the same reason. Always, 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 man. And this is amazing, and this is funny. And maybe you can let go of a little bit of regret because this is kind of funny. Your robot machine here dumped a bunch of chemicals in your body that said, you got to have it. You got to have that girl. You got to have that boy. You got to have that car. You got to let them know what you think. That's when we test the program and we realize, oh, yeah, right. It is the way I thought it was. I just had to push the envelope to figure out whether or not it was still the same way. One of my friends posted another meme. You know, I think it was my friend Sasha again. She picks the greatest content. But it reminded us all about, you know, failure is the place where you really get enlightened. And the other one is, you know, certain memes that say essentially not to care as much as you did about something, because caring about something drives you to misery sometimes, right? Hey, you can only do what you can do. And you know what? Sometimes what you might say is like, okay, well, I can accomplish this much stuff normally in a day. And today, I couldn't do it. I was tired. Technically, I know I could have maybe sat at my desk, pushed through something, but you know what? I just didn't have it in me. Well, there's your weekend. There's your random weekend that just occurred to you, especially in this day and age, right? When you learn how something works through failure, take that as a huge success that what you have done is, you know, you'll make decisions when you're 25 years old about how the world works, how your mind works, how the soul works, how the universe works, period. A million other mechanisms. And maybe you live for 10 years and you're like, okay, you know, I made that decision a long time ago when I barely knew anything about the universe. Maybe I was more intuitive to the universe because I was younger and more accepting of concepts, or maybe I was full of it. Guess what? It's time to test it out. And so you might actually deliberately look for something that your gut's going to go, you know, this is a super bad idea. Don't eat that whole pie in one sitting, right? Last night, which was, I guess it was yesterday, went to bed kind of early, which was about 2 o'clock or so. Still had some energy in me, but I kind of was mentally spent. And the way I do things is kind of a weird story. I'll just make it super quick. I typically buy only the food that if I ingested it all within a day, I'm not breaking any calorie barriers. I can do it. And then the game is kind of like, can I get away with not eating all this? Because then I've gone underneath and I maintain this girlish figure. And I was at my Mexican restaurant that I typically drive by, and I try to be careful with Mexican food. I'll get like the whole plate, but I only like, you know, the main part, and I don't eat all the beans or any of the rice. I never eat the rice. Anyway, I drive by, I get up to the window, I look inside, and I realize, oh man, they got like rice pudding. I dig rice pudding. Haven't eaten much all day. In fact, it was my first meal of the day. And so I was like, okay, can I get that? I don't know what the proportions would be. It was a pretty good tub of this stuff. I was like, whoa, that's a lot. So I came home, went to bed, woke up kind of peckish, you know, and I was like, oh man, I'm going to watch some What's My Line on my iPad. Got a really good episode. And it had Johnny Carson on it too. It was Anna Marie Allegati or something like that. It's in their 60s playlist, about four down. But then I was like, I went and got that stuff and I'm eating it. Now, technically speaking, at no point should I be eating this whole tub. I should eat like half of it, right? What happens if I eat the whole thing? Well, one, you can put some winter coat back on. But two, it'll fill up my gut so much that when I try to sleep, I'll be kind of like, you know, full and like, you know, burping that stuff up. But I did it anyway. I was just having so much fun with these episodes. I did it anyway. Immediately, I started regretting it. So I had to kind of stay up and do some other stuff. Ended up staying up till 6 o'clock in the morning. It was a dumb move. It was against my gut instinct. But I did it anyway. And now guess what? My likelihood of buying this stuff is rare in the first place. But if I ever get it again, you know, I'm never going to eat the whole thing again in one sitting, no matter what time of day it is, right? Stupid example, real example. But this is how we figure out whether or not the decisions we made were good or bad. Let's go back to the souls. One reality about souls, in my opinion, is if you have a soul, well, then there's a ton of them. There's a, God, who knows where they come from? Here comes the popo. You know, there's a big question about, you know, is there infinite souls? Is there, you know, in any one point in time, a planet can use up a bunch of them, but there's just a ton of them? Or is there a finite amount of souls, but there's so many of them, like ethereal particles or something, that, you know, don't even worry about counting them. Don't even worry about count when it comes to souls. But let's just lock ourselves down to where we exist today, this plane of existence. You got souls out there. Your relatives, your friends, people you never even met, because they passed and left before you were even born. And souls that are attached to other beings that have never been human ever. Maybe they've been tigers and lions and bears. Oh my. But maybe they've been Martians. Maybe they've been something else. Maybe they've never been any type of matter being ever. Maybe they're the architects of this place. Who knows? Now, when you think about getting instincts from outside sources like that, because I do, I always think, well, you know, I don't imagine, unless I make myself extremely unique as a human being, that just a random dude walking by, being a genderless soul, of course, but a random soul is going to go, oh, who's that kid? Oh, yeah, well, look what he's doing. That's a really stupid decision. I got this packet flew by me on the old soul net, and I looked at it, and he's trying to make a decision about something. I can't even believe he has to make a decision. This is obviously one way. And one way, it's death, and the other way, it's great. Maybe not physical death, but just death of his hopes and dreams. All right, so he picks it up off the assembly line, goes, hell no, and sends it back super express mail, right? Then my gut goes kaboom, and I test whether or not I'm intelligent or not. So, the random soul, yeah, I keep it open. But the souls, I think, that have a vested interest in my success are the souls that made me. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Biologically, we have a body, and biologically, we are related to, technically, everyone who made decisions up the ladder. We're all related to each other up the ladder. We really are. So when they say, oh, did you know that Barack Obama is related to George or Bill Clinton? Or, no, sorry, George Bush, that was the thing. I'm like, oh, really? How many generations back? Oh, it's like 40 generations. I'm like, yeah. Because at that point, we're getting close to like the inception of man, right? Divide that by 3 to get a century taken care of. My God. Anyway, I think people who loved me, either through having met me, I was their grandson, I was their best bud, they're there for me. Because they wish the best on me as I wish the best on them. But there might even be a few layers up to kind of go, well, I'm going to take care of my family line. It's a game. It's just a game. There's also potential that, as the Pharaoh said, if you speak my name, I will never die. Well, some of you will have relatives that you learn about later as you get older. They're long gone. They were never on this earth when you were alive. But they're very interesting people, very accomplished people. The more you learn about them, one, the more you learn about yourself. But at the same time, you might learn, well, gosh, their passions seem very similar to my own, respective to the sort of theme of life from the 1800s till today or something like that. And so the more you research them, imagine them on the other side going, hey, you know, they're up there playing some, I don't know, forgot what that game's called, that retirement people play in Florida where they push those little things on the ground. Whatever, up there in the retirement community and someone taps them on the shoulder, hey, you know what? Your great-great-grandson is totally getting into you right now. Really? Yeah. All right, here, take over. And he just kind of comes down and goes, oh, what are you looking at here? You know, and here you are digging into all this other stuff. And you could establish a bond, just like we do in our world here. As it is above, so too is it below, and so too is it below. Maybe so too is it above. And then you establish a connection. You get a little guardian, someone who's going to be interested in you. Now, if you fade away from them, and you fade away from the interest of them, well, they may stick around. They may not. They may at least check in on you. Does time constrain them like it constrains us? Most likely not. We can only move as fast as we move in this world to accomplish anything. So we have a limited frequency. You know, when you see a hummingbird fly around, that dude's like living, you know, 10 years a day. I mean, this little guy's just humming around. It's crazy. Well, if we could move a lot faster and communicate a lot faster and accomplish things a lot faster, we too would accomplish things more in a short period of time. So say you go to Soul World and now you don't have any instrumentalities limiting you. And let's say the soul could be a quadrillion hertz computer. They're living a lot more life in between little moments of interaction. It is my hope, although I can't find any logic for it, they can hop around time, our time, from their realm. I don't know if I can explain that at all. Thinking that time is just merely an illusion, right? Created by the passage of history. So this gut feeling seems to me to be sort of the easier proxy to the body, but I will say that I feel like I get intuition 100 times more than I get the gut feeling. which is interesting. I've told you guys 100 times. Don't exaggerate. I've said, look, it's not the huge decisions you make in your life that typically make you who you are. It's the millions and billions of teeny tiny decisions you make every split second you're alive. And so the meticulous craftsmanship of who you are as a human being is really happening at that more intellectual level, what I would call the intuition level. Smaller decisions are much easier to make than bigger decisions, right? So the bigger ones are less frequent. They sort of dictate a turn in a script. You're moving into a different paradigm of existence. You aren't married and now you're going to be married. You are married and you're going to get a divorce. You're living with your parents, now you're going to live on your own. You weren't in college, now you're going to college. That kind of stuff, big stuff. Now, let's think about this. Let's switch the roles, turn the tables. You're the soul now, and I'm your buddy, or I was your buddy as a human being. And let's say you are a busy soul. There's a bunch of fun stuff to do. You're living in a dream existence, and you've lost all of your human constraints, let's just say, and you're living in this pure light, unbelievable thing. Knowledge, who cares, you know? Knowledge is only respective to what you're trying to figure out within the paradigm that you exist. So the second you cease to be a human being, world history, what do you care? You don't live in it anymore. How the human body works, you don't care. But you do care, perhaps, about an individual soul that's related to your soul tree connection. Imagine branches. The branch that you come from has a bunch of little branches next to it, right? But way on the other side of the tree is a bunch of souls that maybe you won't meet in your entire existence. So the ones next to you, like, don't mess up the branch. Let's make sure you go in the right direction. We don't need a bunch of negativity coming back up this wire. And so when you're making these big decisions, here they show up. They're here to give you course corrections. Big ones. Isn't it interesting that we talk about near-death experiences and the stories typically have the same archetype? You're alive, you're doing something, you get in an accident of some sort, and then your body, your vision floats away from your body. You go to this place, which never has pearly gates, never has Jesus Christ, never has Peter, and you meet somebody up there. I've heard relatives, I've heard random people. I think I've heard God be, you know, construed as who they were talking to. And what do they say? They say, it's not your time. Got to get back down there. And so you come back down. Now, again, the last two people I heard this story from through a single degree proxy was both guys didn't know each other at all. Both had gotten to accidents. And they said they were so pissed when they were put down back in their bodies because where they went had no pain, no worries, no nothing, like everything. Every burden of everything was pulled off of them, and they just wanted to stay. And when they got back in their bodies, what happened? They felt their broken bones. They had to go to rehabilitation, had to live with the consequences of the mistake, be it their fault or someone else's fault. Doesn't matter. They had to pay the price. But now, what's the inverse of that? The inverse is, welcome. It was your time. You're supposed to be up here. Either way, it's kind of interesting. If you stay, well, apparently, most people say, look, once you have a near-death experience, and again, used to be back in the 70s, these stories are very loose and whatever, but today it's doctors and scientists, and they're talking, they're like, man, I was an atheist until this happened to me. I will no longer doubt the existence of God and a much bigger ecosystem to where we are. I give you that little anecdote because as we talk about this being a real thing, we have to think about why would some folks be sort of educated into the gut, like the Asian cultures, and use it, and others, I don't even dream anymore, you know. It could be that this is a body consciousness question. The less conscious you are of your body-soul connection, the less you have utilities at your disposal, such as the gut and such as intuition. Now, there is an interesting sidecar to intuition, which does work. I can't say it's less effective than intuition, but as someone who's sort of a statistician with their life, they look at the statistics and probability of any decision they make. They go get all the variables. They study failures and successes of other people. And they make their decisions that way. That's probably pretty cool. They're probably exploring part of their brain that even I don't consciously explore. Now, one sort of question I have about this is the gut an easier proxy connection from them to us than intuition? I actually, my instinct, my gut feeling about this is that the gut is an easier proxy. I also am absolutely certain that there are rules between the soul realm and this realm. Otherwise, we'd have ghosts everywhere. Everyone would see their old relatives. They'd see their buddies. Even if only for a visit, you know, your loved one passes earlier than you thought. Doesn't matter what age they are. And they come and visit you and they say, look, I'm totally cool. This place is awesome, by the way. Don't even sweat being in your life. Why don't they do that? Because if they broke the paradigm of this existence, then this one would lose a lot of its imperative behaviors. We're to wonder whether or not there's something beyond this life, keeping us, you know, on our toes while we're here. Because otherwise, this might turn into a weird thing. Why do we forget the other realm when we're in this realm? Because this one comes with constraints. And I don't think the other one comes with a ton of constraints. There have been movies that, in a way, sort of allude to this, and it's all fictional. Obviously, it's a movie. Like Being John Malkovich was an interesting movie. It was the movie I saw with Sid Mead, first time I visited him. We didn't know what we were going for. It was just like, we're like, whoa, that was weird. But this was the old adage, and Woody Allen made one too, where you have a bunch of people inside your consciousness all playing the different roles of certain types of instinctual behaviors, you know. One of them may be a sex fiend, the other one's a scientist, the other one's a spiritual hippie person, you know, whatever it is. And they had to vote on how you would behave. So you were an amalgamation of all these different consciousnesses in your mind. Sometimes I think about whether or not we have committees on the other side that might take a vote on any one piece of intuition, any one opportunity that we're afforded, any one epiphany we might have that might be creative. And again, it doesn't have to be like painting, singing, or anything like that. You could just be creative within a solution that you need. When I have experienced massive gut feelings, there is almost a chorus of opinion within this burst of gut feeling, as if there are souls singing in harmony to give me this vision of this is good, this is bad. It's up to you, man. Free world. That's why you're where you are. Intuition? Intuition feels very personal. Intuition for me personally, the way that I've construed this in my mind, I think I was probably in my early 20s, but I've told this to other people in my early 20s. It's like a pair of lips right on your ear, whispering into your mind. But what's funny about that little analogy is that there are other fictional analogies that are very similar to that, which we must be careful. Any of you ever saw Animal House back in the day? The guy that played Amadeus was a really young actor. And there's a scene where he takes a girl out. And he's a good guy. But he had an opportunity to have sex with her while she passed out due to some drinking. And he gets her in the shopping cart, I think, and he takes her back to her folks' place. And he's got to ring the doorbell and leave her there. But just before he rings the doorbell, he has an angel on one shoulder and a demon on the other. And I won't recreate the dialogue because it's very graphic, but the demon was really pushing him to go ahead and have his way with the girl prior to pushing the doorbell. The other one was very feminine and was saying, you know, don't you dare. It might have been him, but I think the devil one was not him because he was raunchy as hell. I'm not sure that actor could do that. Might have been, but I can't remember. This has been done a couple times in movies. That's the one I really remember. The reason why I mention that is that I did an episode called The Black Apple, which is a very serious episode about a weird thing. And it overlays on this as a potential thing that I think you should be aware of. I think you should go watch it if this next little example appeals to your mind, which is the following. Truth comes from within your gut, from inside you. As a Buddhist monk once said, or no, sorry, he was a guru. Sorry, he was an Indian guru. He said, essentially, when you form a thought and before you speak, you form it inside your gut with the empirical truth that you understand at that one point in your life. And it comes up and it comes out of your mouth as truth. If I ask you whether or not you love someone that you love, that opinion, if you just pay attention to the almost the geographical soul location where that opinion is immediately answered, is inside your chest, it's inside your gut, inside your soul. But all day long, depending on what kind of person you are, and again, if you rot your pineal gland, maybe you don't have this problem, don't know. Fluoride being the number one way to rot your pineal gland. But for me, this ever since I figured out this technique, this is almost, it hasn't ended, but it only comes at me through these weird strategic moments. Now, Freud always said that you have this id, which is your total ID down inside your consciousness. And it is a child and it is terrified and it's irrational. And he explained anything that you have that's sort of irrational that you're doing that you know you shouldn't do. If you're a drug addict or something like that, or you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, it's usually some form of addiction, because we typically don't do one thing bad once. We do a bad thing over and over and over again. But you will have this thing where there's almost an outside projector that's projecting at you, which is beautifully portrayed in Ralph Bakshi's movie, Wizards, where this evil brother was broadcasting Hitler videos in the sky, distracting an army of elves that were then rolled over by an army of demons. It's so perfect, right? But this force seems to know everything about you. It's like an evil Babel fish working with your mind. And it will project at you false realities, false truths, with full backstories. And the interesting thing is I've talked about in dream episodes, and a couple of you confirmed that you have this as well. You'll be laying down on your pillow, and you're going into twilight zone just before you go to bed, right? Just before you fall asleep. And you will worry about something instantaneously. It has a whole backstory, a whole history, and thinking it through for a couple more split seconds, you'll go, wait a minute, none of that's true. I didn't do that. None of this is true. It's all just made up, and I just got a big worry burst in my chest. Again, I don't really have that much anymore. But once I was able to make the distinction between the truth that was coming from me internally and these outside projections, man, it just started going away. It was almost like it can't feed on me anymore because I won't give it the reward of an emotional burst. Imagine a being that exists somewhere between the soul realm and the physical realm, and it feeds off of our emotions, no matter what they are, but especially that crispy, creamy negativity we might come up with. And Big Herc should know this, because prisoners get into this big respect game. When you're in prison, the main reason why you'll get shanked, killed, or try to do it to other people is you feel like you've been disrespected. And when you've had all your freedoms taken away, respect is one of the only solid prized possessions you can have. And when you're in a feral world of dog-eat-dog, which is what those worlds are, your respect is your juice with everyone else in the prison. And if you lay down and you try to be nice, man, you're going to get reamed by these guys, sometimes literally. The reason why I mentioned that little digression into the other episode is that intuition can be sort of scary if you can contemplate the fact that you're listening to anyone give you a plus or negative, right? It was an interesting story for those of you like David Icke, which even though I totally don't see eye to eye with that guy, I respect him. I've never heard him being a shill directly. He may have been manipulated at various topics, but whatever. We all get misled. But he talks about doing ayahuasca in South America. I'm pretty sure that's where he took it. And he said he ended up talking to a female voice for like 13 hours straight or something. And that this voice, I mean, imagine having a conversation for 13 hours with anyone, right? I don't think I've ever done it. But this was his big moment where this voice, this female voice, told him that he was going to change the world with what he was going to do. Sort of like that scenario I gave in an episode that'll be coming up about creativity. In fact, I think I aired that one, right? I've told you that you've done something amazing in the future, and I'm going to show you in a time machine. And before you even get there, you've imagined 50 things that you probably, that are probably one of the things that you've done because you just know your potential, right? So he comes back to England. He's a, he was a famous soccer player / football player, goalie, gets rheumatoid arthritis really early in life, has to bail out, becomes a famous sports commentator. And then he pushed all of his chips in with what this woman told him, goes on this interview with this guy who's sort of like their daytime Johnny Carson, and they make fun of him the whole time. He holds his own really well, honestly. And he was very heavy into the reptilian theory of the queen in the Windsor family, a bunch of shape-shifting reptiles. Okay. You know, still going to hold out on that one. And I'm not doing it to make sure people like me. I'm just telling you, man, I need a little bit more something. If anyone shapeshifts in front of me, I'll let you know. But somebody said, and I think it might have been even a religious person, which is interesting because it's just they teach you some pretty decent instincts with these instincts, okay, which is that how do you know you were talking to or listening to an angel, a good voice? Because that's sort of how he took it. In his mind, everything that he was told that he was going to do was virtuous. And so in his mind, he branded them virtuous. And maybe they were. Don't know. Not casting any judgment on anybody. So imagine this alternate theory of that conversation that he was actually talking to a demon, something evil. Now, a lot of people will just immediately knee-jerk the other direction and go, well, geez, if you're talking to someone who's evil, then they would have always said something satanic. You know, you would have been able to figure it out, especially in 13 hours. They would have slipped. Well, imagine a fairly omnipotent being on the other side who has been, that hasn't been burdened with a body. It's been taking in information and reading the tomes of evil for God knows how long, right? So it was an interesting twist for my own mind to go, oh, yeah. I guess you could. The time in my life where the devil sort of came and went was in that book that I was writing that I've told you guys about, where it was essentially the devil was testing man, all of men. And through writing this book and just thinking it through, I thought, you know, does the devil even exist? Because the 89 earthquake had just occurred. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who actually brought me to this church. And he's very religious, young guy, late 20s. I was in my late teens. And I told him, I said, you know, are you sure this devil thing exists? Because, you know, when that, there's a story about the freeway that fell in San Francisco. And a couple met as a result of trying to rescue people. And they end up getting married. Who knows if they're still married, right? So I said, look, that evil, dark situation was for someone else the most wonderful thing that ever happened. A buddy of mine who used to beta test parachutes, I guess would have been probably in the early 50s. He was one of the first dudes to test the square canopy. Well, before the square canopy came out, he was jumping out with the old round kind, and he landed, it didn't work right, and he landed in a tree, and the tree went down. and then swung him the other way like a cartoon and slammed him in the ground, broke his leg. Well, where did he meet his wife? His wife was his nurse. Horrible situation turned into a wonderful situation. You hear about these all the time, right? So anyway, I mentioned a bunch of other case examples for my buddy, but then my buddy throws down. He believed me, and he was like, yeah. And he got into it with his best friend, who was the turned out to be the pedophile youth minister of the Camarillo Church of Christ. And he's just like telling me, he's like, you sure this guy, I think this dude's got it right. And I'm like, oh my God, I did not tell you that story so you could run around and, you know, argue with your buddy. I was just thinking about this for the book, right? So that went on and evolved to the point where I was thinking to myself, these little voices that you hear in the intuition side of things, not the guttural thing, because it seems like the gut is almost 1,000% correct, right? The intuition can be the one that says it's got your lust in there. And the reason why I'm, you know, piling this up in these two different atmospheres is very specific. In my personal experience, you let me know what you've experienced. My intuition fights my gut, and my gut fights my intuition. It's like the intuition is the inception moment of a particular path that I might travel. And the gut is the supreme court of my consciousness. The intuition seems almost deliberately masked in its whisper. It's whispering, right? It's got covet means, it would seem. Whereas my gut's like walking in, fully disclosed, fully transparent, going, no, yes. The question for Big Herc would be interesting is, prior to robbing the bank, what were his gut feelings? What were his intuition feelings? I've never done something that epic before in terms of severity in life, you know. And you know, I'm gonna be fully disclosed to you guys about a weird feeling I've been getting over the last 5 years. And I've alluded to this, if not put it on point in other episodes, but just in case you missed those episodes, don't blame you. I'm wondering if, because the significance of being alive in a human body and then dying and being reborn, in an infinite sense, I do think that there's something at a higher level that's going on, which is that you're reaching into this realm with constraints, and you are getting kernels of knowledge and kernels of probably more wisdom than knowledge, right? You're testing knowledge to see if there's any wisdom in one way or the other. It's a binary end product. It was good or it was bad. And you add that to your soul, and then when you get reborn, hopefully, you're becoming a better person. Whether it be better for God or better for you, maybe it's both, who knows. But I wonder if, just like the old stories of Zeus and the gods, beautifully portrayed in the initial Clash of the Titans movie, the old claymation one from the 80s, or maybe it was late 70s, I don't remember, I saw it in the 80s, that little golden bird, right? The golden owl. They show a coliseum of sorts, and we're pawns in the game of life, just like Mongo, baby. And they're playing with us. Now, I try not to get as cynical as we are truly game pieces, and maybe we even volunteer into the system. We're like, hey, what is that? What do you got there? And it's like, oh, it's this new game. Well, how does it work? Well, you pick a character. Here's a bunch of them over here. A bunch of them in the shelves around us, right? Because I think that's the way they did it. Because they punished that one dude to look like the devil, right? They gave him hoofed feet and stuff because he was the son of this woman. He did something wrong. I can't remember what it was. And they punished him to look like that, whatever you call that beast creature, that kind of goat-headed dude. And they take you off the shelf and they put you down inside. But imagine you're electing into the game and you're like, okay, yeah, sure, man, that sounds good. I'm pretty bored up here doing anything I want. See, yeah, what is this? That's pretty cool. Well, you know, put me in a really good time in history. Okay, here's maybe the 60s. You're going to dig this, man. Boom, you know, whatever it is. And then it's them watching you inside the simulation, sort of like a super advanced video game. You'll see my episodes on Matrix keyword at deepthoughtsradio.com, and you'll get a bunch of this interesting, you know, speculation into this type of thinking, game thinking. But now, who succeeds in this world according to the merits, according to the reward systems that this world has created, right? Money, maybe some people worry about fame, notoriety, whatever. And those things give you more opportunities, right? Whether or not it ever helps you be a happy person, well, that's probably up for your interpretation of those events. But, you know, tons of money, well, you can go anywhere in the world you want to go. Tons of fame, well, you can go anywhere you want in the world and you don't have to pay, you know. And you typically get loved by a bunch of people, whether or not you actually earned it or not. But isn't it interesting that the folks that sort of let it all hang out and take it on the chin every once in a while, David Icke being one that's sort of a really rough road traveled kind of guy, he gets his notoriety. I mean, that dude would probably struggle to walk in a fairly populated area of the world without being literally recognized, at least in Europe and America, Australia, Canada, just right on sight. Maybe you can cruise around India and Africa, no one would recognize him. But the one that I think about the most, it's just arbitrary, and I've just thought about this for 10 years, is David Bowie. What an interesting life that guy had. And I don't know a tremendous, I mean, I know, I've watched a couple of documentaries on him and sort of where his education was, where his brain was. But he, you know, he struggled with his sexuality at one point. I think it was his wife that said, man, you should wear dresses. It's sort of who you are. And so he did. And he was a chick for a while. Then he went into this sort of androgynous space dude. And then he popped out in, I can't remember what the album was called, but it was where he did China Girl and Let's Dance. I think maybe that's the name of the album. But then he's all locked up again. And he's good. And he pretty much just strengthened that character until the day he died. But it's almost as if the universe is going, or the people that watch over us are looking down going, well, do something, man, do something. Stop doing the same old crap all the time. If you just do the same old crap, well, then you're just going to live in the autonomic system of the universe. We'll just make sure you get your food and shelter, and you can just kind of live an okay life. And nothing, you know, no judgment against you, but it's like for those people that live balls to the wall, as they say, they tend to find success risking it all, you know? You know, your Adam Ants, your Prince characters. Michael Jackson, a little bit more tumultuous, right? Didn't quite get on his own for a while. No matter how much he was on his own, he was supporting his whole family and he had a lot of constraints. But there's dudes out there and dudettes that really let it ride. Now, a lot of times, obviously, when you look at the moral base of society, it's all over the map in terms of what some of these folks do. But I will tell you, this is not my wish for myself, but there is a factor of this whole thing where I think maybe even being immoral is part of this weird thing. Like maybe it doesn't matter as much. I don't know. Or maybe it's a game of saying, hey, do that crazy stuff and don't cross any of those lines, because that's the true win in the end. You know, the Walt Disneys. Had a listener, I want to address this situation. I am going to do eventually an episode on Walt Disney covering his life story, my research, especially in talking to people that knew him. But you get this knee-jerk thing, which I heard, gosh, 10, 15 years ago. And actually, I think I heard it before there was any really good ability to research it, which is that he was some molester of children and that he was a 33 degree Mason and all this other crap. Let's just use some modern day examples so you can figure out how the game is played. Steve Jobs is dead. Well, they greenlit a movie about this guy with Ashton Kutcher immediately. Then that wasn't good enough. They didn't throw enough shit on his history. So they made another movie with Cumberbatch. That movie, they literally said, Ashton Kutcher did not make Steve Jobs look bad enough. So let's get this other movie going and let's make him look super bad. Let's take this little 1 year event in his life where a woman that he had sex with shows up later and says, you're the father of our child. He's like, look, you're about the 90th person to say that. 85 of which I never even knew. But they know I have money, so they're coming after me for my cash. So he has an attorney, go establish paternity. Once he establishes paternity, within that year, he names a computer after his daughter. Was he the best American dad? I don't know. Go ask Lisa. You know, go ask his other children. I don't know. But this movie goes out. Even his daughter came out and said, yeah, this was made to look like my father hated me for about 40 years straight. Or even more than that. Not the case. Not true. Why are they all over that guy? Because he dared to threaten Big Blue. He dared to threaten the establishment. And even though he may have appeared to capitulate at the end, he was going to sue Google out of its mind to make sure that they didn't steal the iPhone. Well, and his pancreatic cancer that was cured by Stanford University, little organization you might have heard of, he publicly stated at his acceptance speech when he got his degree at Stanford that they had cured him, that he had this little, you know, he had the 4% kind that could be cured. Fine for a few years, put all that weight back on, he was good, then boom, he dies. And believe me, I've seen the stupid scan of the piece of paper that said he had AIDS from the WikiLeaks, you know, file dump or whatever. Give me a break. It's a piece of paper someone wrote his name on. You call that proof? Give me a break. But where do pedos go? They go where kids are. We've seen it. The Boy Scouts of America has turned into an absolute Catholic church at this point, right? You're almost expected to be a pedophile, to be a scout leader nowadays. And now they want to force girls in there. You know, it's like, what? We have Girl Scouts for that reason, okay? Two genders and a bunch of identifications. That's what we have in this world. Whatever. Don't hurt anybody, and I'll support you 100%. So, 33 Degree Mason relationships. Well, I should probably say ahead of time, I know I'm off topic here, but we're just going to go in this because why not? It's a preview. He did get into some little group. It wasn't Masonic, but it was a sort of a precursor Masonic thing when he was, I believe, living in Kansas. I did find out he lived less than 100 miles from where I grew up. Atchison, Kansas. That's where it was. Anyway, this is something all the kids did. They have no idea what the hell they're doing. They put a little pinky ring on. That's it. He moves away in his early 20s to go do animation. And the rest is up to the point of his death. Now, 33 degree Mason things. Well, let's just say you're an amazing person. Any one of you listening to my voice become an amazing person. This is not an in vogue thing today, but it was a super in vogue thing in the 60s, especially. Guess what? You could go to bed on a Friday night and you're not a Mason. And then you can wake up the next day if you're Walt Disney. And you'll get a notice that you're a 33 degree Mason. Have you done any of the 33 degree Mason crap? No. Have you gone to the meetings and learned all the secret stuff and wore the Gmail apron on the front of your body? No. Guess why they do it? They want to be able to tell other people that Walt Disney is a part of their group. It's a notoriety thing for them. So not all 33s are real members. They're honorary members, and there's nothing you can do about it. They'll just put your face on a wall and say you have it. Now, here's the thing. You might say, well, he should have said, I'm not one of those guys, F you. Well, in the 60s, those dudes were really powerful in the United States of America. He is in a constant situation where he needs to borrow money to make movies. This dude made one movie after the other and made every movie more expensive than the previous film. And he's trying to build a theme park. And he's trying to extend the theme park. And he just happens to be working on the wing of the park where they're trying to push in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, which has got a bunch of skull and bone stuff in it and a bunch of their history. All right. So don't believe everything you hear about everybody in the past. If they were a good person, they're assassinated for pretty much the duration by which society itself remembers they exist. But back to the gut instinct thing. As Big Herc said, it's real. You got to trust that kind of stuff. I think that if you can hear my voice, you've had a gut instinct moment, if not dozens of them that you've even forgotten. I've probably forgotten almost all of them. I think, too, sometimes life is, well, there's an analogy I can give you. Let's say that you're prone to gravitate to what's good for you. Then you may not be in a situation where you are having to contemplate what we would call the obvious. I've made a lot of career moves in my life, especially when I was younger and age discrimination wasn't a part of my existence. But you'll just go the right place because it's obvious. Well, then I'm not making a gigantic decision that needs a gut punch to get it going. If anything, I am being faced with something that is sort of primal, and I'm going, gosh, should I sleep with this girl? Should I date this girl? Should I? I'm not really a druggie, so I've never had a big issue with that. But, you know, I have to say I've tried cocaine twice in my life. One, not having any clue what I was doing. And two, I was an adult, and this couple brought it into the room. Very atypical couple to have this stuff on them. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm in a good place. I don't have anything I need to do tomorrow or the next day or whatever. Let me see what a bump feels like. And poof, nothing. No change in my, which is really weird for me because if you give me a joint and I take more than two puffs, I'll be so wasted that I will be absolutely stoned out of my mind and nauseous. Well, at least if I mix alcohol with it. So the reason why I mention that is you may just be following a really good path. You may just be, I would say, instinctually driven to what benefits you. And so your need to make these giant decisions is more rare. I was trying to think if I could remember any giant gut instincts I've had in my life that was either don't do this or do this. Oh, I'll give you one. I mentioned this a long time ago. Met my high school sweetheart. It's the summer of 85. It is late June, 85. I've been, you know, summer crawls on you in Kansas. It gets really hot in May, 100 degrees or so. I was just a blast furnace of programming. I was working on my paint application. I'm painting a Prince painting, having a blast. And my cousin calls me. He bought some new scuba gear. He wants to go down to the city pool. I really don't want to hang out with him because then he's going to play with his crap all day and I don't care. But I love swimming. You know, later that year I became a lifeguard, the following year I became a lifeguard. And it's an heirloom to our town. It's just a great place to go, blah, blah, blah. Good food, whatever. And so I'm sitting there, but I still have this instinct. Man, I remember looking into my bedroom, which had my computer up and everything. And it's just the whole frontier, man. I'm looking at this and I'm working on the first drawings and I'm doing in my own paint application. So I'm just playing with the software, trying to debug it, you know. And I'm on the phone. I can still see this like it happened a day ago. No one else is in the house. And I'm like, I had a car. That's true. He's going to pick me up. And so I said, yeah, okay, come get me, man. You know, it was like something said, one, you need to get out of the house. And two, there's something there for you. Just go. And so I go to the pool. I'm chilling out. And the weird thing was, this was so serendipitously set up, like the gods set it up. I'm sort of midway in this gigantic pool, 600,000 gallon pool. And I look up and there's this girl that I knew from junior high. And we got separated by 1 year. She's about to come into high school. And so I'm like, oh, hey, you know, what's going on? She's really cute, man. She's just in her prime and she's with a good friend of hers. And then the rest was history. A year and a half later, we broke up. But for a year and a half, I had an amazing introduction to how jealous a fool like myself could be. My curiosity after doing this episode is going to be the following. Since I've thought about this, thanks to Big Hurt, will it become more of a thing to contemplate things in this manner? Is it something that one uses as a tool? Can it be triggered through conscious thought? Or is it something that you merely have to wait for the universe to care about a decision you're making? Could it be that, you know, we would, we'd like to think that things that we're making a decision about have these giant paradoxical statistics that we need to consider such that a gut feeling would resolve that for us? Or should we just, or are we at a level of maturity, I should say, where we're making these decisions so powerfully that we're like, eh, I'm always making overall the right decision for myself. Because the other side of the game is the gut feeling is almost an apparatus that will help you when you do not have complete sets of example data. Example being, it's snowy outside, you live in that kind of neighborhood, you don't have to go to the store, your friend's house, whatever. You don't have to. You want to, or you want to just check that off your list or whatever it is, and you look out and you're young. And so you haven't slid on black ice. You haven't driven past the semi on a two-lane highway with snow everywhere, not realizing that, man, depending on how the previous truck or car in front of you move the snow, your tire could catch it and you go right in front of that semi and you're dead. The more you live, the more those things become intuitive and you just go, you know, I don't need it that bad. I'll go out tomorrow when it's all sunny and fresh and when the plows have had, you know, four or five passes. Listen to how the weather comes, you know, like reports of the weather, people, other people going out. And so maybe it diminishes with time. Don't know. I think one of the areas that I'll close off with is the following. Because the world is full of so much disinformation, we are definitely having to lean on our gut when it comes to, is this person bad? Is this person good? Is the letter movement real or is it not real? You got Lynn Wood out there throwing down, man. This dude's like, it's real. You're going to find out it's real. God is going to win. He's really bringing God into the equation, which again, if they win, then they're going to destroy everybody's faith. So again, that's why I don't like that whole argument. I think what is amazing, I watched a bunch of videos today I did want to watch. And it was about this whole thing that's going on right now. Maricopa County thing and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Because the organizations that are definitely tied into this deep state agenda are so doubling down on their BS, it's beautiful. What was speculative before is now almost a certainty. They're not real. The information they bring you isn't real. Probably should disengage if you're still engaging. And quite frankly, if they have a big logo and over $1 billion worth of revenue a year, they aren't real. I can almost guarantee you. It's the little tiny organizations that have a chance of getting it right. But then again, getting the information to tell you anything is really tough. So you are having to lean on your faith, your gut, your intuition, your whole life experience, where people have told you things that didn't come true. So it might be a really good time to give this some conscious thought. I would be interested, again, in any of your experiences, your views on this whole thing. The one sort of comment I haven't gotten, as much as I guess I would like to get from you guys, because I'm trying to take sort of a cultural tally, would be a good way to say it. Sorry, I keep bumping my mic. I got to figure out how to push this thing further away from me. But is, you know, do you believe in a soul? Do you? And if you do, sort of what are your views on a soul? What do you think it is? Do you think it's a Christian-based thing? Do you think it's just some other thing? What do you think? Because I'm interested to see if any of you can enlighten me with a perspective of a soul that I've never mentioned on the show. I can make a whole episode on one of your comments, you know. But wait, I want to say, I have been very turned off by hosts of videos who constantly drive you guys to make comments. Like they'll show you something hideous, right? Well, tell me if you think this is a good idea. You know, it's just obviously, it's like almost like comment bait, you know. But let me say this. Since I have been asking you guys for more comments, the comments in the last, this is March 4th, morning of March 4th, or May 4th, excuse me. This is May 4th. May the 4th be with you. And in the last 2 weeks, the comment quality has gone even higher than it's already been. So thank you guys so much. Again, the way the policy goes, that if I push the like button on your comment, whether or not I like you or agree with you or whatever, it's irrespective. That's my signal to you that I read your comment. And again, I really do try to give you guys real comments back. I do apologize that sometimes I'll say a comment and then you guys write a great reply and I'll read it, but I'm trying to get on to the next one so everyone gets touched before it's over. I try to get to every single comment. The only batch of comments that don't have any decent feedback from me are really old ones before I really built up a regimen to do this. So again, it might take me a week or even 2 weeks to reply to you, but you know, if you, as long as you get notifications that comments happen, which I think you do on your app, just wait for it. If you're giving me compliments, thank you so much. I do get a fair amount of compliments on the show. I try to be as genuine as possible, so I won't always say thank you, but just know I totally appreciate you sharing your time with me, because it's I know time is very, very valuable, and I know every single one of you who get to this point in the video, you definitely respect your time. So I hope that this is a good distraction for you, that it gets your mind thinking. That's the whole, that's the super substrate of the show. It's just say, me to say something that makes you think about all these things that we think about a lot, but to have someone else echo, I think about that too. Here's my opinion. What is yours, you know? So I appreciate you guys very, very much. Just know that. And my policy with compliments, as I'm complimenting all of you, is that I always tell folks, especially when I find super talent in one particular metric, I'll tell them, look, I don't get a chance to compliment people that much because I have a very strict policy on complimenting people. I feel like people do it too much. They knee jerk too much compliments, and that sort of dilutes their significance, I think. But sometimes you're so talented at whatever you're doing, I can't stop. It's like sometimes and it's not your whole life. It's just if you're a singer and you sing well, if you're an actor, you act well, you comment, and you're a great mind. I'll just always be there like, dude, this was amazing. Thank you so much. So I'm very fortunate. And if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. We have the video, the audio, the social media, the remastered season one. There is a store, which a lot of you guys have been picking up items. We just have hoodies for the Deep Thoughts University, and we have just kind of a hand grabbing the logo, and we have the I Like UFO shirt out there, which is, I wear mine all the time, and it started so many great conversations. So just know it's kind of thought, it's so that someone asks you what you're into, and then you can reply, and you can share all your ideas as well. You're not watching this show because you're not interesting. You're watching the show because you're very interesting, probably more interesting than me. So just use that as a mechanism to spread your wings, man. We have a new section on the site, which is suggested content. I'm going to make a big push this week to put a ton of stuff up there. And it's just videos that I watch that I think are really valuable, or article here and there. It takes a little bit because there is no decent thumbnail mechanism for the template that I'm using for YouTube videos. So I have to cut a frame out of the YouTube video, save it off to the side, post the video, upload that as a thumbnail. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.